brother. Oh, what's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I
brother,
can
like,
dig it.
Stop right up.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, sir?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. We finally hitting a bit of a cool down. It's going to be a beautiful day today.
Yeah, well, yeah. Cool down in my, estimation in a different way. It's a cool down for me, man, because, you know, I got a little break from listening to the speeches of all of those people who are kissing Donald Trump's ring. Man, the things I don't do for this listening audience and the radio station. Imagine sitting in the auditorium or in the FISA forum and listening to conservatives, well, MAGA conservatives, for hours upon hours and looking around and like you're the only guy there, you know. But anyway, yeah, that's part of the job. And, you know, I took it on and I got a couple more days of it. But I want to say, and I want to welcome a very special guest this morning. Her name is Alexis. Is it Pleas?
Pleas.
Who is the founder and executive director of the board of Tell the Truth Pharmacy. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show.
Good morning. I'm going to fix that name a bit for you for the listeners. It's Truth Farm. So like what I was trying to help you understand on the phone earlier, it's like tell the truth.
Okay. So it's Truth so Farm.
You know, I'm hearing impaired, so I understand sometimes people can't hear me. So it's Truth Farm, like tell the truth, but spelled P-H-A-R-M, not like farm, like farmlands.
Well, thank you very much for that correction. But I am honored to have you here in the on the airwaves of civic media. You and I met by happenstance a day or so ago, a couple days ago, at the beginning of the Republican convention. And you and I, and there was a gentleman who's a good friend of mine, and he is the guy who's in charge here in Milwaukee of violence prevention, Ashanti Hamilton. And so, you know, in our conversations, you and I happened to have some conversation and dialogue and wound up and found out exactly who you are and what you guys do. You guys, you're from New York and you guys are here. Why are you guys from New York here at the Republican convention? First off.
Yeah. So we have an annual event called the Trail of Truth. And normally we have it in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall. It's a huge art installation, memorial event to honor people who have lost their lives due to substance use related causes. So like overdose, you know, fentanyl poisoning, sepsis, endocarditis. And we do that. We did that in 2022 and 2023. In 2024, we did not have the finances and resources necessary to pull off the big event. And so, but, you know, so we're going to do that in 2025. But I just couldn't let this year go by and lose the momentum. Like, you know, especially with a presidential election year, I felt that we really had to be near the political action to get our message out and to continue to raise awareness. And so what we decided to do was take our tombstone painting event, because the memorial event is an installation of these tombstones we paint for each loved one who has passed away. So what we're doing is we're painting tombstones at each of these key presidential election events. It's a way to raise awareness, get people to talk about the issue. It's a way to compel empathy and compassion. It's really powerful. And so, you know, we went to the presidential debate in Atlanta. We painted tombstones outside of the debate. And then we have been doing it at the Republican National Convention, and we'll do it at the Democratic National Convention as well.
So for people who don't know, Truth Farm's mission is to reduce the harms of substance use by raising awareness, reducing stigma, educating the public, and advocating for policy change. So let's talk a little bit about your story. You are the founder of Truth Farm. Tell us a little bit about how you got into this and why.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm a structural engineer, so not related to overdose issues. You know, my original career was not related to this at all. I have three sons who I, you know, raised like the rest of us. We raise our kids to be have good morals and do the right thing. And, you know, despite all of that, two of my three sons wound up addicted to opioids. My oldest son and my middle son both struggled. And sadly, I lost my oldest son to an overdose in August 5th, 2000. 2014. Right. Because it's 10 years this year. And, you know, after I lost Jeff, I was still working as an engineer, and I, you know, was researching about what our family went through, because what we went through was having a really hard time finding treatment for my son. Both of my sons spent time in jail, both of them. My oldest son had been incarcerated multiple times, and it just seemed really wild to me that it was easier for him to find his way into a jail cell than into a treatment bed, even though he wanted to get better. Like he wanted to get better. And then after I lost him, I joined a grief group online and saw all these other faces added every day. And what was worse was the stories were all the same. You know, all of these parents, all of these families whose, you know, sons and daughters got addicted, tried to find help, couldn't find help, wound up in jail and wound up dead. And so I just had no idea. You know, I feel like I was one of those really naive Americans not understanding what families face when a loved one is addicted, or what a person faces when a loved one is addicted. And I just felt compelled to try to help and make a change. And so I started a community-based organization like 6 months after I lost Jeff. I was still working full-time. And I really just thought I was gonna just start this little community-based organization that I was just gonna volunteer on the side while I worked full-time. And it really just took over my life. The scale of the problem is just so big. It really takes all hands on deck. And I gave up my engineering career, and I've just been doing this work ever since.
So are you satisfied, as you and I spoke earlier, that the wealthiest nation on earth, with resources that can just about encircle all the other nations on earth, and yet we can't seem to do enough to find support and help for Americans who, many people who are addicted, don't, their plan is not to become addicted. Their plan is to escape, if only for a second. And so somehow we vilify people who are addicted in this nation. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, it's so frustrating because, you know, I totally agree with you. I haven't found one person yet who has said, gosh, I really wanted to be addicted and destroy my life. I haven't found one single person yet who would say that. Most people, you know, a lot of people came into this via, you know, pharmaceuticals. You know, one of my sons, that was his entryway into it, was a prescription. My other son, his entryway into it was just experimentation. Like, you know, a lot of people we know throughout the history of civilization and before, and even animals seek mind-altering substances. This is a very natural thing for people to seek mind-altering substances. It's always going to be a part of who we are. It's just normal. And people do that, you know, thinking they're just going to have a good time, and they don't know how to prevent themselves from falling into addiction because we don't talk about it enough. We don't tell people there's actually a safe way to use substances and you can prevent addiction. We don't talk about any of those things. And so then people wind up being addicted. And then we just throw them away. I mean, that's my frustration really with society, is it seems like, I say to people all the time, like, you celebrate the kids who don't use drugs and you do prevention programs hoping that kids won't use drugs. You celebrate them. We always celebrate recovery. You know, somebody says they're in recovery, like, good for you. And we celebrate that. What about in between? Do those people's lives lose value? No, their lives have the same value the entire time. And until we recognize that, and until we're willing to invest the love and the care and the treatment into the people who are struggling, we are never going to get out of this.
The thing about it is we are so judgmental when it comes to these people. And let's be honest, they run the gambit of society.
They are in the
poorest urban communities, and they're in the wealthiest suburban communities. They're black, they're white, they're male, they're female, they're Jewish people, they're Christians, they're Muslims. They run the entire gambit of humanity. And yet in this nation where we have more addicted people than almost the entire rest of the world, we should be asking the questions why, not pointing the finger and saying that these are low-life people who should have known better. We're going to give you an opportunity to respond to that, Alexis, after we take a short hiatus. Alexis Police is the founder and executive director of the board of Truth Pharmacy. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show on Civic Media. Yeah, that's it. Fight the powers that be. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by Miss Alexis Police. She is the founder and executive director of Truth Farm. And so, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, before, you know, the short break that we went on, about this continued, you know, bashing of people who are addicted in this society. Even though a smaller nation as we are, we have more people addicted to drugs and dying than almost any place else in the world. Why is it not a major issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, by the way, for your listeners' benefits, we actually have the highest overdose rate in the world. United States has the highest overdose fatality rate in the entire world. The next country behind us, so we lose over 300 people per day. We lose a rate of about 300 per million people. And our rate is almost double of the next country behind us. So we have the highest overdose fatality rate in the world. The other thing that, you know, we know about the United States is that we've chosen to criminalize substance use in a very heavy-handed way. And the study, you know, resources and studies show that that the higher the incarceration rate, the higher the overdose fatality rate. So the more we punish substance use, the more we have negative outcomes. And I think, in my opinion, part of why our society views substance use the way that they do is because of this framing of criminality. And so until we remove that criminality element, we're always going to have the rest of people who either use substances in a healthy way or use legal substances, right? Because let's not pretend that there aren't substances out there that are legal that are absolutely just as dangerous, but we judge less, right? So until we remove that criminality, we're always going to view these people as throwaway people. At least that's my opinion. That's what I think that we have going on. When you look at somebody like who gets lung cancer, we're still empathetic with those folks, right? We're also empathetic with people who struggle with alcohol use disorder. We're more so empathetic with them than with people who have drug addictions. And it really has to do with that criminality element. So until we stop criminalizing substance use, I really don't think that we're going to end the stigma that we see.
So let's get to the root of Truth Farm and why. The opioid crisis in this nation that people have been talking about for the last 10 years, and Big Pharma, who clearly was culpable in creating this opioid crisis, wound up settling with our government for $55 billion. And everybody heralded that as this is it. This is going to fix it. You know, the government settled this and the pharmaceutical company fessed up and they did all these things. And now we're going to change all this because there's going to be money to go around to all families who've been harmed. What have you found?
Yeah. So what we have found, and we're one of the organizations that advocated for all of those funds, you know, so it's been really a frustrating situation. But what we're finding is, the federal government pulled in that $55.2 billion, as you mentioned, billion. And then that money gets distributed to federal agencies, to state governments, and then down to counties and to cities. And even though there's some guidelines in place about how that money should be spent and what it's supposed to be considered is new funds. So it's supposed to be new funding. Nobody's supposed to use it to infill funding. They're supposed to use it so that we can actually end the epidemic. But what we're finding is governments are either putting the money in the bank and not spending it. Nevada, I just learned yesterday as an example, Nevada has pulled in $44 million. They've only distributed $2 million in 2 years out of the $44 million. While they have an unhousing, you know, an explosion of unhoused people and people struggling with addiction, people can't get treatment. They've only spent two of their $44 million, and $1 million of it they spent on their own employees. They're not putting money out there to increase capacity to treatment. And we see situations like this across the United States. We see cop cars being bought. We see, you know, salaries being infilled. We're just not seeing the dedication to this issue like we should.
You know, the horrors of this is you hear constantly rural America is really suffering because of the addiction and the opioid problem. And yes, they are. But so is urban America. The truth of the matter is both rural and urban Americans, this is an issue that we should come together collectively on and address this, because it is unacceptable. And then I talk about politics and politricksters and people get angry with me. But again, the truth of the matter is politricksters have allowed this to happen. They have control over what these people in government can do with these resources. And so the pressure needs to be brought to bear on both on the politicians to do what is right here. The suffering that the American people, you and other families like yours, and even people who even to this day are struggling with their own children who are facing these kinds of issues, are just being totally dismissed. And so that's what's at the root of this. You hear people say, especially right now, that the border, the fentanyl crises, and all of the people who are dying from fentanyl overdoses, and it's coming from those people at the border who are bringing this fentanyl in, and they're not doing anything to address those people coming in from the border. What's fiction and what's truth in the statement I just made?
So the fact is, the majority of the drugs that come into this country, and this is even in every DEA report that you can find, the majority of the drugs that are coming into this country are coming in through legal ports of entry. They're not coming over a scattered border with, you know, immigrants with fentanyl strapped to their backs. People need to understand the quantity of drugs that are coming into this country are in shipment container size. We're not talking about what people can stuff in a backpack. We're talking about major quantities of drugs, and they come through legal ports of entry, and the DEA only captures about 12% of them. In my opinion, it's probably a purposeful oversight.
Hold that thought. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is Ms. Alexis Police. She is the founder and executive director of Truth Pharmacy. What say you? You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789 is the number. Yeah, there is a five-alarm fire going on in this nation that, you know, is not as visible as it really should be. And listen, you know, people may say that I'm an anti-American. I'm far from that. You know, my guest is Miss Alexis Police, and she is the founder and director of Truth Farm. And Truth Farm is to educate people about what has happened with the opioid crisis and addiction that exists in this nation. And whether we want to stick our heads in the sand or not, to me, that's what we've been doing as a nation. And it is not going well. So you won't believe this stat, but over 96,000 people have died of drug overdoses in America since 2021. Help me do the math. That's 3 years. In a war in Vietnam, a full-fledged war with America and the Vietnamese, 50,000 Americans died, and we were outraged that 50,000 Americans died in a war.
Right.
Why are we not outraged that almost 100,000 American citizens have died from overdose in this nation, and yet silence? You know, my phone lines normally stay lit up, but we don't have one call this morning because I think people don't see this. If it doesn't affect them personally, they don't see this as a crisis. What do you say to people who are listening right now who think, well, you know, this is somebody else's problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I've been doing this work now over almost 10 years, I've been doing the work. Each year, the number of overdoses rise, and each year there are more families who are impacted. We actually now lose 100,000 lives per year to overdose in the United States. You almost can't find someone who doesn't know someone. In the situation now is, you know, it used to be, you know, when I lost my son, there's different waves of this overdose epidemic. When I lost my son, they call that the second wave of the epidemic. And it was when people were dying more from heroin use than anything else. We're now in the fourth wave of this epidemic. And so in this fourth wave, what we're seeing is people using, say, cocaine, and all of a sudden fentanyl shows up in it. The person has no tolerance. You know, maybe it's just somebody using, you know, snorting coke for the weekend or whatever, has fentanyl in it, they're dropping dead. We're seeing people trying to get prescriptions through the mail, even seniors trying to find ways to buy more affordable prescriptions through the mail. They don't realize they're getting counterfeit pills. And we have senior citizens dying from overdose because they were trying to find affordable medication through the mail, which is just wild to think of. And so this really can impact any person. This really can impact anyone. And I think that people are still so attaching this to this idea of criminality, and people who are dying of drugs or drug overdose are people who did it to themselves. And I think the longer time goes on, people are going to start waking up. But it's just too damn bad that we have to wait until everybody suffers before we wake up and do something about it.
You are a prime example. An engineer, your children, you know, you lived a middle-class lifestyle.
100%.
And so people who are listening, who may live that middle-class lifestyle and think because of where they live, that they're safe, because that only happens in the poor part of town or where people are struggling, don't understand. And if they've been fortunate enough that their child didn't fall prey to it, they've got grandchildren.
Right. That's right.
Who are vulnerable to this. Right. And it's an issue that all Americans should be on board.
Yes.
To address.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, I mean, going back now decades and looking at how the drug war was framed, we know exactly what got us into this mess. We know that certain substances were made illegal because the government thought that they could criminalize people who used specific drugs. Again, we got to be always clear about this isn't about criminalizing all substances. It's really only criminalizing certain substances. And originally that framing was around really racist policies and the government's goal to lock up Black and brown people. And so the rest of society, I think, kind of followed suit in not understanding this division of trying to punish people for using substances, but it was only certain people. Now it's crossed over into white communities. We do see people trying to pay more attention, which is, you know, of course, frustrating for people who've gone through this for decades. But we need, you know, we need to finally come to the recognition that people use substances. That's just a matter of fact. We can pick a upper class white woman, and I bet that she uses a substance, but it might come from her doctor, right? Or it might come from a alcohol bottle.
Right.
People are all using mind-altering substances. We just need to get people to wake up and understand that what some people access is a deadly supply, and what other people access is not a deadly supply.
So let's talk about what is even more insidious than just the fact that Big Pharma created this crisis. But now Big Pharma is also starting to profit by trying to come up with the answers to this. Let's talk a little bit about that and why, you know, it is just so insidious that this can take place. We talk about the greatest nation on earth, but these things happen right in the broad daylight, not in the darkness.
That's right. We, I mean, it's wild to me because the very same companies who got sued for starting the overdose epidemic, the very same companies are now creating medications to try to profit off of the people who are struggling with addiction. There's a medication to help with opioid constipation, right? We've seen that commercial where the construction worker needs to take a pill to deal with his opioid constipation. We have pharmaceutical companies creating new overdose reversal drugs, which are really draconian medications that cause people to go into withdrawals for up to 12 hours at a time, just to reverse an overdose, which could have been reversed with naloxone cheaper. And yet these companies are trying to sell this as a better medication. It's not proven. It's every single other side effect of the drug is more negative than naloxone. And yet they're trying to make money off of the fact that they got a nation addicted.
You know, I think it's absolutely unconscionable to know that there are vending machines now placed throughout the nation with Narcan in them. And so the nation is aware of all of this. It's not like they're not.
I
just think the people of the nation who aren't aware of it. And so do you find it difficult sometimes as you've been at this for a decade, that still trying to educate the American people is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on, is to educate this listening audience across the state of Wisconsin that there are people who are aware of what is taking place, and that your loved one, you know, you can yourself try to fight this, but alone, you know, it's like tinkling brass.
Yeah.
But collectively is the way to address this. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I have so many thoughts. You said so many really powerful things there. But, you know, to educate the listeners, you know, there's a few things that I would say. I believe everybody should have a naloxone kit in their medicine cabinet at this point in time. You know, it doesn't matter if it's your grandfather who has a prescription, you know, for opioids. Or, you know, somebody might take a pill thinking that it's, you know, a regular pill and it's a counterfeit pill. Everybody should have a naloxone kit in their cabinet right now. It's just too dangerous a time not to have that. So I would want your listeners to know that it's a medication that reverses an opioid overdose. And you may not think your loved one uses a substance, and then the next day you find them unconscious. And I don't want families to go through that. The other thing that I would say in terms of education and people struggling alone is, I think people do need to talk about this more, even if your family is going through it. Find somebody else who's going through it. Find a support group in your community. Connect with people so that you're not going through this alone. It's a really tough time to go through and have a kid of yours or two kids of yours. I mean, one of my board members is sitting here. She has two daughters that are struggling right now. One has been incarcerated and one is in treatment. It's a really hard thing to go through all by yourself. So you need to build a community and find people that you can trust, that you could talk to and have support from. And support your neighbors who you know are going through this. You know, I always say, like, this is the thing that nobody brings you a casserole for.
Right.
It's, you know, my son, I was trying to keep two sons alive at the same exact time. And I was running my kids to outpatient treatment and all over the place doing all this stuff. Nobody brought me a casserole. You know, nobody supported me. I had a coworker whose kid had leukemia and they had all sorts of fundraisers at work and they were supporting that person. My kid is also dying and I'm actively trying to keep him alive. I didn't get the same kind of empathy at work. Nobody was having a fundraiser or bringing me a casserole.
So what do you say to people who are embarrassed because their child is addicted? And the fact that to be embarrassed is the wrong way to approach this. It has nothing to do with you as a parent. It doesn't mean that you failed as a parent. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just repeat exactly what you said. There's really nothing to be embarrassed about. This is really similar to like a mental health. We need to talk about it. The more that people talk about it, the more that we get awareness out there and people understand they're not alone. I think people would be surprised if they open their mouths and talk about it. I bet they have a coworker, a friend, or a neighbor who's going through the exact same thing. And then we can start supporting each other as a community.
For heaven's sakes, the present president of the United States has a son that, you know, has gone through this. And only through the grace of God did he survive. Right. So and what did people do? Vilify the son and the president.
That's right.
You know, because his son was addicted. And the same people who were doing the vilification probably had somebody in their own family.
That's right.
Who was, you know, was addicted themselves. So addiction is real. Whether it's with alcohol, whether it's with drugs, it is the same thing. People looking to escape what is happening in their lives. Got to take a short hiatus. My guest is Alexis Police. You can join us at 844-967-2789. She's the founder and executive director of Truth Pharmacy. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You know, I've been butchering your last name. Alexis, how do you pronounce your last name?
No worries. It's Pluse. It's Pluse. Like a goose.
Yeah. All right. Okay. It's Pluse. Thank you very much. And Alexis Pluse, again, is the founder and executive director of Truth Pharmacy. Let me ask you, 844-967-2789 is the number. For somebody who's in this audience and going through this crisis right now, they don't have to do it alone. Where can they go this moment to get some support?
Well, and, you know, it's like part of me wants to tell you, and then part of me wants to say the bad news. The bad news is here we are 10 years. Well, actually, we're 13 years into this crisis. The CDC declared this an epidemic in 2011. So here we are 13 years into this crisis, and there is no clear-cut answer to that question. And that is exactly why we're out here fighting every single day to turn that around. Wouldn't it be nice if there was some national hotline or some national number that I could say, here's exactly what you need to do. But it's different in every single state. And in every single state, a person who tries to find help is going to find varying levels of degree of beneficial help. As a starter, I would say go to SAMHSA's website. It's SAMHSA. And they do have treatment centers listed that have been vetted by SAMHSA across the United States. But then the next step is, do you have insurance or do you have Medicaid? Does your state have Medicaid programs where they'll accept Medicaid? Is your insurance accepted at all of the facilities? And these are the hoops and loops that we don't want to see people have to go through. Most people, you know, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the show, or maybe when you and I talked the other day, only 1.5 people out of 10 who seek treatment can find it.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I lost my son, it was 1 out of 10. So 10 years later, we have only improved that number by half a human being. And that's what really pisses me off. You know, the government has gotten $55.2 billion. We now have the financial resources necessary to make treatment available for every single person. And it's still not simple.
Let me tell you how insidious this is. And people need to hear these words. There are children, 11, 12 years old, who are now addicted. Stop me if I'm saying something incorrect, Alexis.
Nope, it's a fact. It's an absolute fact.
And it's growing.
And so
if you think that, you know, it's not you, it may not be you.
Right.
But this thing is expanding at record numbers. And again, we're talking about wars, and we're terrified about wars, and we're spending billions of dollars on war machinery to protect supposedly the American people. We spent almost $1 trillion on the military to protect the American people from what we say is coming, but yet it's inside of the nation,
right,
that we are suffering, and yet right. We can't get people to see that. Isn't that frustrating?
Oh, it's so frustrating and so heartbreaking not to take care of our own people. And, you know, we've just seen it for far too long. And even, you know, one of the things that we can say, it's like the song that was playing when we came on air again. Another thing that we could talk about is why are kids seeking an escape?
Right.
You know, as you mentioned, people are seeking an escape. Why are people seeking an escape? They're seeking an escape because we're living in a country that doesn't give people hope for the future. We have poverty running rampant in our country. We have families who are two people working as head of household, and they still can't afford housing. There's unhoused people in the United States who work full-time jobs. Like, we are doing something vastly wrong when people, our own citizens, can't survive even when they're working. And so, you know, young people are looking for an escape because we don't have a hopeful future here. And so the addiction problem is going to continue to rise until we address some broader issues in our country.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to keep your phone number close by, because even once you get back home in New York, I'm going to be troubling you. Because if this is not going away, right? Whether it's President Biden or Donald Trump, this issue is not going away. So I want to thank you very much. I'll be reaching back out to you. It was a very informative hour. It went by too fast.
It did so fast. It was really a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine. We're going to make sure you get access to this so you can spread it. Thank you. Up next, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Teach a new way. They're the ones that suffer each and every day. Teach the children. Teach the baby. Teach the babies. Teach the children. Teach the children.